Welcome to the Stranger Still podcast. I'm Miles.
And I'm Kathleen.
And we're rewatching every episode of Stranger Things ahead of the May and July two-part releases of season four.
All right. It's been 3 years. Let's catch up together. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at StrangerStill22.
Subscribe, review on Spotify, Anchor, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go.
Like a single-celled bacterium instinctively responding to danger, let's deploy our defense mechanism of talking about this episode. Chapter 4, Season 2, Will the Wise.
Oh, Mr. Clark line right there. Gotta love Mr. Clark.
We do. We're pro Mr. Clark.
Ancillary character. We love him.
Yeah. So we start off on the field. Right where we left off chapter 3.
Yep. Joyce races to the school on high alert, as she has been the last year, and finds Will standing pretty much catatonic in this field. She's trying to wake him up. Meanwhile, it flashes to his, his basically his consciousness is in the upside down, but his physical being is in the right side up. Mm-hmm. But it flashes to the upside down, and he's being enveloped by the smoke monster. I keep wanting to call it the smoke monster. The shadow monster.
We can call it right now. That's what they call it at this point.
Shadow monster.
On unfortunately bad advice from the fat hobbit.
Oh, Bob. Come on, Bob.
Will stopped running. Now he's being enveloped. and they're all just looking at him. And they're, Will, wake up, wake up.
And then the scene ends with him. Eyes.
Ooh.
Wide open, yeah. All right. So from there, Joyce brings him home. She's trying to figure out, what's wrong with him. She tells him, you got to stop lying to me. Tell me the truth. What is going on?
Why is he lying? I mean, not saying that I would handle it that much better being possessed by a smoke monster, but why does he continue to lie? He coughed up a worm. For all he knows, he's consumed and on his last days. He has some agency right now. Why not start talking?
We already know why he lies. He sees the effect that what he's going through has on his mother, but also he's tired of being treated like a lab experience or something that's going to break.
No.
And so he's trying to just get back this sense of normalcy. So he doesn't want to admit that all of this stuff is going on, even though it's a stupid kid thing to do. You should be telling your mother exactly what is happening with your body.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was, and not wanting to put her in that position again is a huge motivator that I missed the first time around.
Absolutely.
But you make a great point.
Yeah. But Joyce, she tells him she saw the shadow monster. She saw the shadow monster outline in the video that they took from Halloween and talks him into finally telling her what is going on. And oh boy, does she get an earful.
Yeah. And this is the first great Winona acting moment we get of this season. She's like, I will never let anything happen to you.
She cannot promise him that. Obviously, all of this stuff that's happening is completely outside their realm of understanding and power, really. How can she
not a
tell
responsible
him,
promise.
Yeah. I will never let anything happen to you. Well, Mom, I mean, you already did let the shadow monster totally take over my body. Yeah.
And this is also a big moment where everyone says, Will is doing really great acting. The character who plays Will. Because really in season one, he was just a MacGuffin, basically.
MacGuffin.
Do you know what that is?
I have no idea, but I like the sound of it.
MacGuffin is an object or device in a movie or book that serves merely as a trigger for the plot.
MacGuffin.
like the Death Star plans in Star Wars, Ark and Covenant in Indiana Jones, like Private Ryan and Save It Private Ryan, Private Ryan. So Will was just the thing that people were looking for last. So this is the first time he's really part of the cast for real. And a lot of people say Will is doing an extraordinary job acting.
Miles.
I don't agree. I do think that he does a good job, that he does a good job. But he is, and he deserves credit for making a truly bold choice. Like, for example, a Shadow Monster did not actually inhabit him. He's making it all up while sitting at a table with cameras pointed at him. So he is like going for it and and really going hard, but he doesn't have the nuance and stuff. Like Millie Bobby Brown is in this show. He's got one note in this scene, and it's a good note, it's a bold note, it's a strong note, but it doesn't make him a great actor.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you there. I think the actor, I'm terrible with names. I don't know anybody's names except for Millie Bobby
Schnapp
Brown.
Is this actor? Will.
But the actor that plays Mike, I think he does an excellent.
Finn Wolfhard.
Okay. Oh, nicely done. He does a great job. Of course, Millie Bobby Brown. The character that plays Max, she's amazing.
Yes.
You know, I think he's more maybe on the level of Lucas. Lucas is a really good actor as well. I agree, but he's definitely. Is he like the best? Is he something to go home and talk about? No, I just think he does a good job.
He's at the bottom of the power rankings for the kid actors. Yeah. So
still
then we
good,
get
though.
Then we get the bathtub scene. Joyce is taking Will's fever or taking Will's temperature.
This is part of my creepiest moment of this episode.
No, I have that down too. This is the first like season two moment when Joyce draws the bath and she's calling to Will in the other room. She's like, "Do you want me to do it?" He's like, "It's too hot." And she comes in there and he's let the water out. And she's like, so you want me to put the water back in? And then you just hear,
"You know, honey, I need it to be warm. You need to warm up."
And he just, "No." And it's a different no. And she knows immediately that was not her sound.
It's not his voice. Yeah. No. He likes it cold.
Ooh, he likes it cold. Yeah.
That is such a creepy moment. Because you see, it, like you just said, it's not Will at that moment. It's the shadow monster. Exactly. And then he's just like that. He snaps back and you see his face change back too. That I thought it was really cool.
So
it's just
talking.
A really creepy moment.
Yeah. This episode also has, you know, later a cat being brutally murdered. So we're into
it's already dead by the point that we see it.
Oh no, but I mean, brutally shown to us being consumed at least. We're at a different point. Stranger Things is ramping back up for season
that's
two.
True. Yep. Yep. Well, so next up we've got Hopper and Eleven. Uh-huh. Ugh. The fight.
Man, Hopper has taken on the most dangerous and difficult teenager of all time, or preteen
of
all time.
This is my favorite part. I say it that way, it sounds like I'm really excited about this part, but really, I just think this is like one of the best, most accurate to real life scenes. Mm. That we have in this episode, maybe even this season. I don't know. We got to rewatch the rest, but we're just watching episode by episode right now. So there's a lot of stuff we don't remember. But this scene is just so excellent to me because I feel like it tracks like really how that situation would go with somebody in Hopper's position caring for this girl who's not had a normal life, who also has all of these powers. I mean, at the age she has, she's going to be testing her boundaries. And so, I mean, I just think that that is so accurate.
Yeah, look, and it's written really well too. It's escalating from this moment. You know, you put us in danger, and then the TV, that situation
you're
escalates
grounded.
It because Eleven is attached to that TV in a way that Hopper really doesn't appear to understand.
Well, that's like the
her life.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing that she's had basically,
and it's how she sees people. You know, you just graduated for no TV for a month to no TV at all, and he unplugs it there.
Freaks out.
Yeah. Fun fact that I read was that episode of Cheers that was on the TV was truly aired that week in October 84.
Are
there was
you
like
serious?
an accurate timing for that episode of Cheers.
The level of details that they put into this show, that is incredible.
So Hopper gets the book and Eleven throws the book back at him and then throws the couch at him a little bit. Did you fear for Hopper at all? I mean, Eleven exploded six people's heads only like three episodes ago. Did you fear for his life?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, she's never had a sense of like real life before. And you saw her in season one just kill two guys.
Kill two? No, she killed six at a time in the school.
Oh,
when
that's right.
When they became mush.
I was referring to the scene where they're locking her up in the room and she just like snapped an egg.
Yeah, she and two guys in the van, she kills at least 10 people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. At any point, she could easily just kill Hopper. But, you know, she won't because even though she's this angsty tween.
Yeah, I was afraid she didn't have control of her powers because at the end, she's in there, she's screaming, he's banging on the door and she explodes all the windows and stuff like that.
I think she meant to do that.
Okay.
I mean, to a degree, I don't think she thought I'm going to explode all the windows. She thought, I'm acting out.
Yeah.
And I just feel so much that I want to break something. Okay. And she breaks all the windows.
Apparently all that stuff broke and shattered and fell while the actor David Harbour was truly in the room. That was all done practically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not digitally.
See, even more of a reason to like Hopper.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
The acting in this scene from both of them is ridiculous. Both of them are nominated for Emmy in this season.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. I like that.
And Millie Bobby Brown, like, not to keep crapping on Will, but Millie Bobby Brown has a nuance to her performance that is so different. It's hard to talk acting.
Well, it's hard not to crap on other actors when you have somebody like Millie Bobby Brown in here. It must suck to be compared to her.
Yeah. There's a line that I thought kind of exemplified her just maturity as an actor.
Yeah.
When they're at the peak of it, after the TV has been ripped out, she says, "You lie," to Hopper.
Oh, yeah.
And for most kid actors and most actors in general, you're supposed to scream, "You lie." You know, so most actors would go, "You lie," or something like that. But she has so much hurt and so much hesitancy and so much pain in the "you." You know, "You lie." You know, she just does such a good job with that stuff. I noticed, I'm like trying to find, it's hard to talk acting, but it's not even subjective, right? You know, it's not a statistical thing, but there is so much in her performances. And again, it's the one part that cannot have a bad performance because it's the most unrealistic character, really.
Yeah.
You know,
but she makes it realistic. That's why it's so crazy. That's why she's so good. Yeah. Really is.
So then the next morning, Hopper he knocks on her door and he's about to apologize. Yeah. Seems like it, right?
Yes. And that is a truly emotional spot right there because, you know, I mean, we know his history with his daughter dying, and he basically doesn't have anybody in his life. But now this new person, this girl, has come into his life, and he's taking care of her, and he's starting to build a connection with her. But he's also so angry, and he's like basically, you know, freaking out. His whole livelihood, his whole town is, you know, in peril from the upside down. Mm-hmm. And so he's like suffering with all of that. And there's a lot of anger there. But I don't know. You see his emotional side that he feels for Eleven, but he's too stubborn to apologize in that moment.
He just, I thought he was going to, and he doesn't. Just takes the easier path, I guess. So he leaves, and Eleven is left to her own devices, starts cleaning. But like any kid, gets distracted with a side quest.
Oh, what's this? A side quest. I like that. Yeah, so she finds the trap door that has all of the storage underneath the cabin. And she sees a bunch of old boxes. And she sees one labeled the Hawkins Lab. And so she pulls it out and she starts reading everything. And that's where she learns about her mother. That she did have a mother. That she might still have a mother. And so from there she goes back into her, what would you call that state?
Well, you know? I see people calling it the void.
Oh, that's a good way to call it. Okay. Yeah. The void. Yeah.
The side of the wire.
So she takes the picture. So she sees the picture of Papa and her mother, and she tries to find her mother. So she goes into the void. And what I really like about this too is throughout season one, season two, season three, you slowly see her powers escalate. And that is so cool. Like, you see her powers growing so that when you do see her do more like intense things where she, you know, does more, takes more down with less exertion, like, you're not surprised about that. Like, the fact that she can go into the void without being in that tank, you know, that water tank. I mean, that's really cool. So anyway, so she goes into the void and she finds her mom. You know, you see her mom sitting in a chair in the void. She's babbling as she was when Hopper and Joyce go to see her. She senses Eleven there, and she says, "Jane." And then that connection is lost. Eleven loses that connection.
I thought her mom was muttering 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42. Lost.
She does say. Did you go back to listen just in case? No, see if that was an Easter egg?
Oh, I thought you were saying, did I go back to listen to find out what the numbers were? I know the numbers. I know the numbers.
What are they?
4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42? Those are lost numbers.
No. What are the numbers that...
No, that... What? Stranger Things. I don't. She's saying like sunflower. All of the things that she is saying, come up later. Remember? Well, we can talk about it when we get there.
Ooh, but, I don't remember that.
But at first, I remember at first being like, oh, is this a connection to Hurley and the island?
You would say. So
Stranger Things has just been a flashback.
For those of you who don't know, obviously, Miles is a huge Lost fan. So, yeah.
But this is going to fracture them even further because Hopper said her mom is gone.
Well, but in his mind, not in her mind, obviously, she's a child. She doesn't understand. In Hopper's mind, Eleven's mom is gone. Mm-hmm. She's no longer there in her head.
No, but she asked if she had a mother, and you could add like she's alive, gone. But she's gone. But, you could say that.
But how could somebody at Eleven's age and understanding of the world understand what that meant, though? So I think he was right in saying that.
Plenty of time to sort it out. I don't know.
I think he was right in saying that to keep her safe where she was. But
I think Hopper doesn't have a step two here. Step one, put Eleven in a cabin and keep her in the woods. What's step two, Hopper? You asked me last time who is right. I'm leaning Eleven after watching this fight.
Disagree.
You know, what's the end game, Hopper?
I think as an adult, he's doing the best he can in this situation. I am team Hopper here.
Okay.
I'm team Hopper all the way. Hopper, you're doing a great job.
Yeah, he's listening.
The world is not perfect right now. He's just doing all that he can to keep her safe. There's no way to know what the right next step is.
Okay, move us forward.
Anyway, so in that scene after she loses connection with her mom, it's a really emotional scene. Eleven starts calling out for her, mama, 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 and she's sobbing. It's really sad.
Yeah. How about Nancy and Jonathan?
Oh, right. So things are brewing with Nancy and Jonathan. So the end of last episode, we saw that they're up to something, but we don't know what. And we find out this episode. So Nancy and Jonathan go on this quest to, quote, meet with Barb's mom to tell her everything.
Yeah. Oh, can I jump in real quick?
Oh, please do.
Nancy lies to her mom and says she's going to a slumber party, right?
Yes. No, Stacy's house. They're going to have rom-com. It's not,
not a slumber party? Okay, how many people does it constitute a slumber party?
A party... what do you call it? A party of two?
How many sleeping kids makes it a slumber party?
At least three.
Okay. Thank you. Anyway, so Nancy's going to...
A sleepover.
Okay, thank you. And she lies to her mom, and she's got all this cover up. She goes outside. Jonathan is not parked. He's parked, like, right in front of the windows. And then when he leaves, he's like... he's peeling out. It's like, Jonathan... kind of
way
blew
to
it.
Be covert here.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, so they go to the park to, quote, meet with Barb's mom, and they see they're being watched by several of these agents that are in disguise, pretending like park goers. They kind of freak out and they go to leave, and one of the agents walks up to the car when the car won't start.
Yeah, this felt like the FX show The Americans.
It would,
who's an agent?
That is exactly
who isn't,
what I was thinking of. Which, do you think that was on purpose or?
Well, no, I think this is a classic, you know, Cold War thing. Like this is a classic. Yeah, there's a lot of movies like this. Yeah,
a lot of stuff happening with the Russians at that time.
So they take him to the lab, and Dr. Owens, you know, comes in and says, "You know, hospitality's not our strong suit."
Thinly veiled threats.
Yeah. And he makes his case, basically. He says, you know, hey, you know, we can't tell anybody because the other people would find out, would want to hurt you, and more Barbs will
lots
die.
Lots of mistakes were made. Abundant mistakes. Yeah. And I'm the schmuck they brought in to make things better. Yeah, but I can't do that without your help.
Yeah, I actually understand Dr. Owens' point of view.
Yeah.
But what he's missing is that who gets to make those decisions? You know, like, who gets to make the what is secret and what isn't decision? It's not the Department of Energy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's where we're going wrong here.
You know, I was listening to another podcast. It was just called Stranger Things Podcast, but it was recorded right after season two came out. And there was a lot of controversy over, like, whether Owens was a truly bad guy or not. And one of them said he was, and one of them said he wasn't. And, you know, I don't think he's really a bad guy. And obviously, he's, like you said, he is doing his job. It is his job to not let, you know, what happened get out, to hide this from other people, to keep it under control. But, I mean, yeah, he does literally threaten these kids.
Well, it's kind of his whole thing in Alien too. Like, we're meant to question the motives of this doctor, but he's also very charming and very good. I'm assuming you're following me.
He's very. Oh yeah, I know. He's likable. Yeah.
Can I do another side note?
You're gonna anyway.
Does Barb's mom show up to the park later, wondering?
Right? Like, what? Where is she? Like, has happened to her? Have they killed her? Like,
because we find out just as they're driving away from the lab, as Nancy and Jonathan are driving away from the lab, this was their plan to get caught. To go in to, by the way, you should have searched Nancy. She's got a Walkman on her.
It was it's just the, like, they're overconfident.
Yeah, the hubris. The hubris of the lab, coming at him. And Nancy reveals, you know, in the way that, you know, they're driving and she presses play and it's
on the tape recorder.
They got the smoking tape. Long recording on that cassette, I assume.
I know.
And good sound, too.
That had to have taken a couple hours.
She's got a crystal clear sound of Dr. Owens.
Maybe the least realistic part of this show.
Nancy should start a podcast. She knows what she's doing. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I like what she says at the end when Jonathan's like, are you sure you still want to do that? Are you sure you want to go forward with this? And she says, let's burn that lap to the ground.
All right, this is the longest we've ever gone without talking about the kids.
I know.
We got to get over to them.
We got to get over to the
Dustin breaking the friends don't lie rule.
Yep.
He has lied to them. He took Dart out and
he's caring for him as his little pet.
Yeah.
Lying to the party as they're searching the school. Poor Lucas is tasked with jumping into the dumpster.
I love that Dustin, he's not good at this lying thing because he comes in there in the dumpster. He's like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Remember, Dustin? They don't know that
but
you found
like
it.
They're 12, so they don't know. Yeah. They don't know he's lying.
And poor Lucas, you know, he has to stink in front of Max.
Oh, yeah, his crush. All while Dustin walks up nice and fresh. Hey, Max, how are you?
Yeah.
But Mike, you know, because all Mike cares about is 11 and Will at this point, he's like, oh, Will's not at school. What's going on? Something must be up. So he calls them. He calls the party into an emergency meeting at school. Of course, excludes Max. She's pissed. Yeah. And tells them what Will had told him on Halloween night. What happened?
Yeah, it's like the fourth time they've done this to Max. They also like, do you think it's true sight? And Max goes, what's true sight? And they're all like, nothing. And
I know, they're almost ignoring that she's standing there.
Remember, she was locked out when they were first introducing Dart.
And they lock her out for this meeting too?
Mike gets a bad rap this season. We talked about it already. Mm-hmm. I personally think his emotion is very real and right. That he's
absolutely.
Bad.
I feel
but
the same way.
The way he says it to Max, party members only!
I know, he's kind of a dick there.
He is a total dick there. Mm-hmm. So the party members only, they're talking about true sight. Mm-hmm. You know, Max gives her piece to Lucas to say, screw you guys. If you're not gonna involve me, then I'm out.
Side note, I have a side note now. The insight that Mike has as like a 12, 13 year old boy in this season when they're like trying to figure out what to do. Oh, he has true sight. Well, what do we do? Is he in danger? And Mike is like, we acquire more knowledge.
Yes.
Like, what a smart thing for somebody his age to like realize, like, we need to get more data. They're like basically scientists.
Mike is a valuable driver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Max gets it, you know,
she's pissed.
And Billy says, don't you dare talk to Lucas again.
So her and Lucas get in a fight. She walks to the car and we find out Billy is even more of a dirtbag than he was before.
Yeah.
This is also where we find out that they are not really related.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Dustin heads home and Dart is gone. It has broken through his aquarium.
He finds a shed skin. It's gross. I can't believe he touches it.
He picks it up. Yeah.
Ew.
But the first thing he says before he sees this, Dart, I got to talk to you, buddy. It's about my friend Will. So Dustin's on his, you know, he's on his way back, I think. But now it's gotten even worse. It's broken. The cat is dead.
It's eating
Dart
the cat.
Is a Demogorgon.
Yeah, Dart is a mini Demogorgon.
Friends don't lie or the cat dies.
Ooh. Just come up with that copyright.
Well, I mean, it's in my notes. But yes, I came up with that earlier.
Miles
copyright Miles McGilvery. Justice for Muse. became a hashtag in season two in 2017.
Muse?
That's the cat.
Oh, yeah. Muse. Justice Muse, for like M-E-W-S. Yeah.
I.
Poor Muse.
What if they didn't have a cat? Is that thing feasting on Dustin's mom when we get home?
Yeah. Was she in danger?
Dustin, my man.
But, you know, while this is happening, Mike, Rockstar Mike, who actually cares about his friends, goes to Will's house to check on him. Joyce is not going to let him inside. And then he says he knows about the shadow monster.
Let's connect those pieces. Right. Hopper, before that, arrives there and he says, Will, you know, hey, they're going to question him together. Joyce and Hopper questioning Will, who can't really explain it that well, which this is the first time.
I'm really disappointed in him. Like, he really couldn't explain it. You see the flashes of what he's seeing. Yeah. He couldn't say, it looks like I'm traveling through tunnels.
Yeah.
Like,
at least give the basics of it, my man.
You have to say
there's nothing. Remember the stuff he said to Mike? Say that to Hopper now.
This was
Will. God damn you, little baby.
This was a moment where I could empathize you and your hatred for Will. I was so annoyed for him in this moment. Yeah. I thought
all of the other characters are so good. Will sucks. Anyway.
Oh, poor Will.
But unlike season one, we break from the season one kind of gimmick is that the kids are able to understand what's happening because it's all reflected in popular culture, in Dungeons and Dragons and Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to explain Eleven's powers by Yoda. They're able to explain the Upside Down by the Veil of Shadows and Dungeons. And this is where Will is basically saying, like, it's not true sight. You know, it's not me going through between realms, you know. And Mike even says earlier in the episode, this is not Dungeons and Dragons. This is real life. He says that earlier. So everyone's adjusting to this a little bit more complex thing. So I won't be too harsh on it. I like it. And Hopper and Joyce say, Joyce says, why don't you draw it?
Boy, I know.
Joyce, MVP performance.
She really is MVP, 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 MVP.
So Joyce has him draw it and he just starts drawing. By the way, does he have to go so fast? He could take his time. Joyce doesn't have to go to work today.
In that moment, do you think he's like channeling the...
You know, that's a good question. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's like...
Yeah, channeling the shadow monster. Maybe it's like... He's clearly like not really himself when he's doing it.
Yeah, and his hand's moving so fast. There's like... You're right. There's like a supernatural part here.
Yeah, but the amount of time it takes her to discover that this is like all connected, like that. Okay, that's not really realistic. But again, MVP, MVP.
Well, I think it's not realistic in the sense that we don't see the whole thing. But
wow,
I think this is what I usually say to you. But I think there's more. There are a lot of people complain about Joyce's like ability to find Clint, but I genuinely think if you go back to chapter one of season two and you see Joyce's face when she very first sees the picture that Will draws, the picture of the shadow mind, she is like, that's real and I've got to do everything. So
she knows.
So she's looking for this stuff. Yeah.
And you know what? It's more believable because of everything that happened to Will a year ago.
And she believed it from the beginning.
Yep.
I mean, a thing came through her wall.
Yeah. So she knows that stuff like this is possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. But I do kind of like the way that he's explaining what he sees. It's annoying, but also like, I don't know. It's creepy.
And he's going through something.
Growing.
I mean, he's got a shadow monster.
And spreading and killing.
He's got a shadow monster in him everywhere. So, and then Hopper, they realize it's Vines. Hopper goes down into it. Again, Hopper, don't do this. Go get somebody.
By the way, when they get to that scene, it is a badass Hopper scene. Mm-hmm. They shoot to him. It's like a shot of him behind. He's holding the shovel that's just over his. Yeah. He's just such a badass. Badass Hopper.
And then the camera flips upside down.
Yeah. When he digs through and goes into that is such a cool scene. So, ending scene is him inside. I like what he says, though. Oh, Jesus. Because you know, he's just like, they've been through so much shit.
Yeah.
And then he's like, of course. Yeah.
All right, let's get to feeler moment and music moment of the episode.
Okay. All right. So my feeler moment was actually that scene where after Eleven has lost contact with her mother and she's crying out, mama, mama, mama. You know, it didn't like elicit a lot of like heartbreaking moments for me, like some of the other scenes were. It's really, that's my moment because she's so convincing. Mm. Going back to her acting, like it truly seems like she is actually feeling those emotions. The way that she like just gets down on her knees and she's crying out for her mom, and the way her head falls into her hands. Like, yeah. It's just very, very impressive how well she acts that out. So we've covered the feeler moments. Now let's go to the music moment of the episode.
All right. One music moment of the day. All right. One of my favorite things about the Stranger Things score, and they've got all these great pop songs. They did the kids theme, Eleven's theme, the upside down, the modulating stuff.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about the score, though, is when the characters are figuring something out. They always have this like productive, like little synth parts that fit together and sort of give the illusion of moving. And there's a track called Looking for a Way Out. This is when they're figuring out Will's drawings.
Yeah.
And you get this thing of this arpeggio sort of, which means playing the notes kind of chord one by one.
Okay.
You're getting this with one synthesizer sound and sort of this floaty thing.
Yeah.
Then it changes tone. Now the arpeggio is in a different synth and or a different filter or something like that. And you get this other part, this bass synthesizer part that's kind of playing the offbeat. And then the offbeat just changed to a different synth just now as well. So now it has
like
a different sound.
It's like building it up slowly.
Yeah. So really, in the course of 20 seconds, we get sort of the main theme style arpeggio. We get this floaty, you know, kind of, you know, synth. Then the synth that's playing the arpeggio, that changes to a different sound while we add this bass synth, which comes in the middle, and then the bass synth changes to a different sound. So we get five total different synthesizer moments in six, you know, in 20 seconds while they're figuring out, you know, Will's pictures, Will's crayons. So one arpeggio and two floaty guy. Number one changes into number three arpeggio, and the bass part, number four, bum, 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 bum. Now number five, bass part's different.
It's like slowly adding on, like you're adding on knowledge.
Yeah, and you get this feeling of productivity.
Yeah.
A lot of people say the Stranger Things soundtrack isn't that good because it's repetitive, but they do the same notes all the time. They're picking through the chords.
I like that they do that though.
But the sounds are so different. They have so many different pads and synths. Remember, it's not digital; it's analog. They're taking these old synths from the 70s and 80s, recording them to tape. And there's just something unreplicatable about it, and I just love it. And that's just one kind of small example of how they do that. And they do it all the time. I mean, because the characters are always playing detective, and they have stuff like that all over the place. There's another track called Connect the Dots, which is a similar one.
That's really cool. I don't know. It's just, again, it's not something that it ever occurs to me, but that is what adds to the integrity of the show. It's it's really cool to learn, you know, what exactly is happening there. I like that.
All right. I think we'll wrap this one up. We'll come back to our question next episode.